Hello, growers from around the world. Thanks for tuning into GrowCast yet again for a powerful episode today. So glad to have you with me with today's guest, Frenchie Cannoli, the legendary Frenchie Cannoli, the hash connoisseur. It's an incredible episode. How could you not love an episode with Frenchie? We talk about hash, we talk about history, we talk about travel, we talk about a lot of stuff. Before we get started with Frenchie, though, shout out to one of my favorite partners, Sweet Leaf Nutrients. SUITELEAF.com is where you can find Sweet Leaf Nutrients. GrowCast15 gets you 15% off the entire website, and MyGrowPass.com members enjoy 25% off Sweet Leaf Nutrients. Sweet Leaf Nutrients, made in the USA, endorsed by the great Danny Danko, the great Elaine Keevan, who we love, our thoughts and prayers to her. And it's an award-winning plant nutrient line with the less is more mentality at the core of their principles. Check out all the awards they've won. In fact, a lot of their growers have won first place for best flowers, best edibles, and in fact, their CalMag amendment has also won multiple awards. So check out their world-famous CalMag at sweetleaf.com. Like I said, made in the USA, premium nutrients, all organic, baby. sweetleaf.com, SUITELEAF.com, GrowCast15 for 15% off, MyGrowPass.com for 25% off. Also want to shout out CocoForCannabis.com. I'm gearing up for their next challenge. Dr. Coco should be on the show shortly. Stay tuned for those episodes. Submit your questions for Dr. Coco. You can get at us in the Slack channel. Follow our link in bio on Instagram. Where else can you get that? GrowCastPodcast.com/action is also where you can find that. Submit your questions for Coco, however you can get at us. Stay tuned. And make sure to join the challenges and everything that's going on at CocoForCannabis.com. Let's get into it with Frenchie, everybody. Enjoy this wonderful episode. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the program. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, please share GrowCast with a friend. Always spread GrowCast. It's how we grow. Check out The Homegrown Helpers by Rob Smith for more growing talk, and my other show, The Coffee Health and Science Podcast. So excited for today's guest. He needs no introduction. He is a hashish connoisseur, a hash maker, a renowned figure in the cannabis industry. Frenchie Cannoli is on the line. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing okay, despite the handicap and weird life that we have.
All the craziness.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
It's wild.
Good to hear that you're staying sane. Hopefully staying in hash, as they say. And that's good to hear, my friend. Right? What more could you ask for? Listen, I want to talk your personal story here in the beginning. If you could just maybe share for those who are just tuning in, I'm interested in your affinity for travel and for world history. And then also the first time that you really connected with hashish.
Well, it's traveling was something I was dreaming as far as I can remember. My first hero was Ulysses, like the Iliad and Odyssey. This was the ultimate adventure.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it's like, and then my heroes were Lawrence of Arabia, a guy called Henri de Montfred, who was actually moving ash from Greece to Egypt.
Oh, wow.
And bon, I was reading, he was like, must have been pretty rich family. His parents were artists, they knew Gauguin and stuff. And the guy left France in the early 1900s, went in the Red Sea, built up a boat with a local, and for 25 years, he dived for pearl and smuggled stuff. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Dude, that was the ultimate for me.
So when you were reading these things like Lawrence of Arabia, it was as far back as you can remember, there's been a deep passion there.
For diversity, for exotism, but while like the 1001 Nights, there is ash story. But when you don't know what is ash when you're a kid, Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's just like the spice that you put in food that you don't know, like.
Right.
So then I became a teenager, and outside sex, they were not that much that were really, you know, interesting. And
it was pretty much taking up your whole brain at 17 years old.
yeah. And but at the same time, it's like, this is it. You're facing life. You're facing adult life. So right. It's like, what are you ready to be a 9-to-5 for the next 45 years?
Right.
And I was flipping out. I was truly flipping out. Sure. And then my best friend, and I had kind of forgotten about that. All I wanted to do was to be a traveler. You know what I mean? It's like that. I grew up with gypsies when I lived in Brittany. Oh, and wow. Like when I was a kid, it was to see the freedom those kids had and they never come back to the same place and stuff. Wow. For me, it was like, wow.
Yeah.
And I smoked my first spliff. And it changed everything. First, it's like I had not been that happy since I had been a kid.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Like that pure yeah. joy of being alive, like.
Right.
And smelling and tasting the ash in my mouth was like connecting with all those spices and all those stories that I was dreaming yes. to have when I was a kid.
A taste and, of that history, and a taste of that culture. It. Yeah, probably changed yeah, your life forever.
And that was it. Then I was 17. As soon as I was 18, I left my house because nobody had a say on what I was going to do. And I traveled for 18 years solid.
Oh, man.
That's all I did.
I love that.
That's all I did.
I love that, Frenchie. So I myself have been all over the world. Not specifically for the purpose of exploring different hashes. I want to talk about that. But I think that world travel is one of the most, outside of psychedelic drugs, is one of the most shocking, mind-expanding, just kind of, you know, thought exploding. Yeah. It's one of the best things you can do to just break open your sense of reality and your worldview, right? I mean, is there anything better?
I mean, it's not good for everybody. For me, I would have given anything for being in a place where I know nothing, nobody, nothing at all, where your senses, your awareness is like full power yes. because everything is
foreign,
yes. literally. And it's addictive. It's yes. just super addictive. I would have given anything for that, even smoking.
I love that.
And I didn't travel in producing country to really learn how to make ash.
Oh.
Truly. No. No, I did that because the quality I wanted, it's not available if you don't do it yourself.
Ah, interesting. Okay, man. We're gonna get into that. Please, like finish your thought.
So I would spend 2-3-4 months in a producing place making my stash for the year.
So cool. It's so
and
interesting.
I would go and smoke it on the beach, basically. I was a bum. You know, like I wasn't like the guy looking for the master Ashishin, la la la. But while I wasn't into like mastering a craft or looking at a teacher, because I was working alongside those people. Mm. Well, they were my teacher. Mm. You know what I mean? It's like I wasn't there to learn, but I work alongside them with their tool, with everything was theirs. I lived with their family for
gosh.
Months.
It's amazing.
So it's like there is a relation that build up, and that whole relation is built around wanting to smoke the best of the best, knowing your resin.
I love
that's
it.
The respect you receive and you give, basically.
It's like a spiritual
but
quest.
It's not really conscious. You know, it's hard to explain.
That's incredible. It's like a spiritual quest you're on.
Yeah, now that I know better at 63, yeah. But when I was 20, dude, I was just a bum. I just like, for me, it was freedom. It's like I had been so, my childhood had been very repressive, even if lovingly repressive. School was like, I beat the shit out of you to teach you something that was a mentality. And when I was 18, I just needed that pure freedom, but like, no girlfriend, no real friend, I didn't go back to France for 18 years. It's like
it's liberating.
Freedom where anywhere you are, anybody you meet at any time, do you want to come and do this? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, totally. That's a cool exploration.
I have no direction. I'm just traveling.
I don't know, man. I think that's healthy.
I don't know where I'm going. I don't care where I'm going. What I care is right now.
Right. For everyone to experience at least once, right? I like that. I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, I was clueless when I was young, but that was really, really smart.
That was the feeling, though.
Fuck, that was the best gift I could have given myself. That made me a more balanced human being.
You're speaking my language. That's the balance, right? You had 18 years of one side of the coin, and you needed some on the other side of the coin. Before we get into making hash, which I really want to cover, really quick, I wanna wrap up this history piece. What culture or piece of hashish history did you enjoy the most throughout all your travels? I recently looked into, I mean, you've mentioned the term hashashin. I looked into the hashashin order from the 1100s, the Order of the Assassins. That was so fascinating to me. I know you have an affinity for Persia and that whole part of the world, but don't let me put words in your mouth. What piece of hash history can you share with us and do you like the best?
You mean experience wise?
No, I mean like which cultures maybe or which places you've been.
India.
Oh, India. I was not expecting India. That. Tell me about that, please. India. Why was it your favorite? What did you learn there?
Because in India, I was sticking live resin of wild cannabis growing at like 7,000-8,000 feet.
That's incredible.
On the palm of my hand, weeks after weeks. And not the cultivated, but the wild cannabis growing there may have been the oldest evidence of cannabis in Zeus Mountain. It's 360,000 years old.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean? So it's like, but this I learned later. But in India, it's like in India, cannabis is supposed to have been born in a drop of the elixir of life that fold on the Himalaya.
Yes, it's part of their creation story. Dropping the bong into the sea of milk.
So there is a lot of power there. And it's the first time where I was experiencing cannabis as a spiritual
vehicle.
Plant.
Yes, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Connected
with a god. And it's like there is a... It's different than Muslim country where you're still a bad boy. You know what I mean?
So it doesn't have the same judgment. It's got more of a spiritual side of it.
It's very, very, very spiritual and has been for at least like 5,000 years solid.
Oh my gosh.
So it's different. It brings it to another level. And making charas in Zeus Mountain was an experience that I stopped having just because my daughter was born and she became more important than anything else in my life.
Oh,
otherwise,
of course, I know how that goes, my friend.
I would still be going in Zeus Mountain for the season, I'm pretty sure.
That's incredible. Wild Indian elevated mountain hash. It's incredible. And I really want to clarify, maybe for someone who's just getting into the cannabis industry or just tuning into the podcast, when you're talking about hashish, when you're talking about this old school hashish, you are talking about making it by hand, right? Literally. I mean, when we talk about extracts now, it's all either bubble hash or BHO.
Yeah,
or,
but no.
You're talking about old
school. There is a classification of concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In a concentrate, you have charas and rub resin.
Mm-hmm.
When the wallness of the gland is on your hand,
yes.
It's not only the resin from the matrix that created the resin. It's the whole gland that you stick on your hand.
Okay.
Hashish, you sieve a whole gland that you press together with a source of heat to create a mass of resin. It's like crushing wine.
Yes.
Okay?
Got it.
To make hashish, I need the matrix that created the resin in my mass for a transformation to happen.
Okay.
If I take the juice from the grape, I can make many, many, many grape alcohol, but I cannot make wine.
Right, right.
Because I need the matrix that created the sugar and the juice to be able to make the wine.
Mm.
Okay?
Yes.
I make wine. In the concentrate world, traditional hashish and rub resin is like the wine of the concentrate world.
I love it.
And every other extract are concentrate. We are all under the umbrella of the concentrate.
Right.
But every one of those extracts has nothing to do with hashish,
right,
and with each other. would you compare a 25 years old Añejo tequila and a whiskey or a cognac? Don't.
Apples
Nobody
and oranges.
Ever add.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
100%.
We're so fucked up, excuse my English.
No, please.
In a cannabis industry that we can't even appreciate the diversity that the cannabis give us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're so competitive, my stuff is better than yours. Dude. You know what I mean? It's like, can we smoke one, relax, and start to be appreciative of
yes.
the diversity?
Oh, Frenchie, you're speaking my language, man. You're talking about gratitude. You're talking about collaboration. None of this competition. None of this my stuff over your stuff. The appreciation.
Like
gratitude appreciation and
appreciation. Of the craft of other.
I love it.
Instead of having the need to being or to always be the best. What does it mean? This like, what does it mean to be the
what
best?
Does that even mean?
Especially for us, because we are so dependent on our farmer anyway.
Yes,
we're as good as what is the farmer give us, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that people are missing a lot when they only try these, you know, very, very critical extracts where it's high THC, very, very, you know, it's not a full spectrum. This term full spectrum is coming around. Nothing's more full spectrum. When it comes to concentrates than hashish, right?
No, even hashish. I would call myself wide spectrum because I use 45 to 160 micron.
Oh.
But I am not a wide spectrum. It's 500 compound plus.
Okay. See, I didn't know this. That's an actual classification. I love that.
It's like already when you take only the resin, you lose half of it.
Okay.
You're not full spectrum. You're sure. Half spectrum. You know what I mean? So it's like, to say wide spectrum, yeah,
I like
because
that.
You try to give as wide a cannabinoid and terpene spectrum as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But full spectrum, according to science, to scientists, you cannot use the word.
Okay, I love it. No, this is all very... eye-opening to me. I'm a consumer, but I don't know any of this stuff. So let's get into the specifics. We have some great listener questions. I saw you getting on the Instagram commenting. I appreciate that, my friend. I know you're busy. You didn't have to do that. So I do appreciate you taking the time to do that. But for the show, I would love to ask about when growing for hashish. You know, so many of all my listeners really are growers, and so many of the growers are growing now for concentrates or extracts of one type or another. when it comes to hashish specifically, what should be focused on when we're growing, you know, the cultivation style, or specifically when the trichome is ripe, is what he was asking.
It's when the trichome is ripe. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm making wine. I need the ripest cluster of grapes. Mm-hmm. With the juiciest, sweetest juice inside.
Yes.
To be able to make the greatest wine. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yes.
But the problem with the cannabis industry in general, you are looking at trichome gland to define the peak of the flowering cycle. Mm-hmm. Okay? The problem is that the flowering cycle is the main metabolism of the plant. Uh-huh. Okay? And trichome glands are producing secondary metabolites. Okay. Hint. It is not part of the main metabolism of the plant. Mm. It's a defense system the plant creates to protect itself.
Okay.
So if you have a cultivar grown full sun and you grow it in a shed or you grow it in a greenhouse or indoor, dude, the coloration of the resin is going to be vastly different.
Sure.
But the content of the gland is not going to be very different.
Vastly different.
If you harvest it at the peak of the flowering cycle when the gland is filled with resin. Mm-hmm. Okay? And there is a weird stuff happening during the final 2 weeks of resin gland, of trichome gland maturation. Uh-huh. You can have high amount of cannabinoid without having the resin.
Oh, right.
Formed
interesting.
Inside the gland.
So differentiating resin from cannabinoids, that's an important differentiation.
Yeah, I have no idea. Nobody has been able to explain me. This is like unknown territory big time.
Wow.
And I can tell you to the day how early or how late you have harvested. Mm-hmm. A resin gland is attached to the stalk by an abscission, like a fruit or a leaf.
Yep.
Okay? That attachment part becomes smaller and smaller and smaller the closer to maturity you are.
Okay.
Okay? So that, and fall by itself when it's totally mature.
Okay.
So instead of looking at a cannabis plant, I'm looking at a fruit tree.
Right.
Okay? So because they're made like fruit, I can look at a fruit tree. So it gave me a better ability to how the fuck can I find ripeness when I know it's not the color, I know it's not the size. Uh-huh. When I learned that it's like a fruit, dude, to get the ripest fruit from a tree, it's super easy. You shake it just a tiny bit, mm-hmm. and the ripest fruit fall. Then you shake a tiny bit harder, and you have that second dimension of ripeness. And a third time, and a fourth time, and I shake my tree harder and harder in my machine. It's 5 minutes with a little bit more power in my vortex. And I shake my tree by increment until there is no fruit. Every one of my temple ball, it's a dimension of the ripeness of the entire tree. Doesn't matter the color, doesn't matter the size, doesn't matter nothing. The only thing that they have in common, how much abscission was there to attach them to the stock.
Jeez.
How much force did they need to fall.
Wow.
Okay. From this, I became really, really accurate into understanding what I work with. And I realized that every time there is a lot of gland, but it's super light and I cannot press it, even you rosin it, there is nothing coming out of it. It's crazy. But there is like the flower where 28% THC.
Wow.
You know what I mean? What's going on here? And I realized when I started to ask, it's like, did you harvest earlier flower? Yeah, because the market, la, every time. Mm-hmm. It's been early. And now, depending of how much melt there is in my gland, how much resin is formed, uh-huh, I can tell you to the day how early or how late you have been
harvested. That's insane. So, okay, don't let me put words in your mouth, but please let me summarize this. Here's the first question. Do you think that most people don't let their cannabis go long enough and that most people harvest too early? Just a generalization.
Yes.
Do you also believe that people rely way too much on the clear, cloudy, amber ratio?
Under 90% of grower, yes.
And we need to start looking at, I love what you said about looking at it like fruit. That's not how we treat fruit. So that's huge, I mean, and mind opening.
When you grow a tomato, you don't look at those trichomes that the plant is producing, and they're fucking awesome tomato trichomes, huh? Big time. When you grow a product, you're looking at the product you're growing to know when it's ripe. Mm-hmm. Okay? If you're growing flower, why don't you look at your flower?
Right.
Because all my farmers, sun-grown, they never look at the
trichomes.
The trichomes, they look at the formation of the flower, yes, at the calyxes.
Yeah, you know, and I wonder, Frenchie, if that has anything to do with the indoor grow world being under HPS lights for so long and your plant's just looking yellow. And when people get those light correcting glasses and they can actually see what their plant looks like under the HPS, I know it's less and less common now, but I just thought that was interesting how you said sun-grown growers don't do it as much. I wonder if the difficulty seeing under HPS attributed to more people judging by trichomes.
No, I mean, no, it doesn't matter the color of your flower, the formation of the calyxes.
Right. Okay. It's not even looking color at the structure. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
You know, it's the structure of the plant.
That's true.
You're growing.
That's a fair point.
You know, I mean, it's like, I don't get it. Like, it's like the world, there is 90% of the cannabis industry that follow the 5, 10, 15, whatever, yeah, percent of amber, la, when there is, it's not even remotely logical when you know the botany of the plant. It's
I love it, dude,
what's going on?
I love
Nobody
it.
Nobody checked nothing.
Well, you're definitely,
it's insane.
You're definitely vindicating what we've said on this podcast before. But yeah, and I think it's just fascinating changing these long-held beliefs. So thank you for dropping that knowledge, Frenchie. Seriously, man.
But I mean, for me, it's important. I'm dependent on my farmer. I need them to have that that ability to grow perfect flower. And once they harvest too early, they know. Like the top flower will be cut to a week early because the market wanted green and want really light resin gland. Okay, so be it. As long as what's left, wait for me to get to the ripeness it need to be, and I don't care the color of the trichome gland.
So interesting.
You know what I mean? I care how much resin is formed inside.
Don't take this the wrong way, Frenchie, but I'd be pretty nervous to grow for you, man. I feel like you've seen a lot of buds. You probably, like you said, look at it and tell by the day. That's got to be some high pressure for the farmer.
No, because I'm at the same time, I'm not a farmer. I'm not a grower. I'm a winemaker.
Yes, exactly.
So I can tell them after.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because it's like those resin glands, it's the life of the plant in its relation to the outside world.
Mm.
It's a book. It's a storybook.
Wow.
It's what I read. It's a bibliography of the plant. If a farmer is making his own ash, he will be stronger, and he will know his plant much more depth.
Sure.
Because he would know the main metabolism.
Wow.
And all what the secondary metabolites that the plant has produced were,
right,
to deal with their environment. You know what I mean? It's like
he would know it like the back of his hand, right? Yes. I like that.
Before we return to the great Frenchy cannoli, shout out to Green Craft Distribution. GreenCraftDistribution.com is where you can find them. GrowCast gets you 10% off site-wide. Members of MyGrowPass.com get 25% off the New England-based online hydro superstore. Green Craft Distribution. They represent some seriously premium hydroponic brands, as well as CBD products. I think they've got Cold War Organics up there, who we love. You can see what they have from Kushly and Canatai, Stash Logics. Like I said, a lot of great CBD choices as well. If you're looking for a new CBD source, Green Craft Distribution is the place to go. Lots of grow equipment, lots of smoke equipment. Like I said, it's an online hydro store. Why leave the house? Just visit greencraftdistribution.com, use GrowCast for 10% off, or use that member code from mygrowpass.com for 25% off the entire site. greencraftdistribution.com. All right, everyone, let's get back to Frenchy cannoli. Let me ask you this, if we can take a little bit of a left turn. What do you think about all this CBD craze that's hitting? I know it's all over America and Europe, worldwide, I understand. And what are your thoughts on high CBD concentrates and hashish?
High CBD hashish is pretty amazing.
Is it?
Yeah.
I've never had it. That sounds great, man. I would love to try some.
CBD connect to the receptor, okay?
Yeah.
CBD is psychoactive.
Yes.
CBD is the exact opposite of THC. Mm. There is no good boy and bad boy. CBD can be transformed in THC. You know what I mean?
Yes.
THCA is more anti-inflammatory than CBD.
Right.
Not CBDA, but CBD. The plant is medicinal to start with.
Mm-hmm.
I can make ash that is pure THCA if I want. But I can make ash that is 40% only THCA, because I want that A block all psychoactive power of the cannabinoid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making a hashish. It's psychoactive. I want it to be strong and psychoactive. So it's like I get rid as much as possible of the carboxyl acid, so that I have something that is more potent when you smoke. You have the decarboxylation that you make when you smoke that is not that huge.
Right.
Plus the 30, 40, 50% that I pre-decarb. That's why ash feels sometimes stronger, traditional ash, even with lower percentage of cannabinoid, because I activate a lot of them for you to feel when they hit your blood system, your brain.
Yeah, buddy, that's what I love to hear. The diversity, can't go wrong with diversity. Another left turn, but I have to ask it because of the hashish and you mentioned spliffs. What is a big difference? What are the main differences you've noticed between the way the rest of the world consumes, maybe specifically Europe? And then America, because it seems to me like Americans are like really concerned with high THC, like dabbing extracts. When I was in Europe, I enjoyed how they mix so many things. They mix tobacco and weed. They mix weed and hashish. They pair coffee with their weed a lot. Just talk to me about the differences that you've noticed from America and some of your other favorite places.
You have no ash culture. We are a ash culture. That's why it's very painful for us to have you use the word ash for extract.
Yes.
It's literally like using the word football when your ball is not even round and you hardly use your feet.
We barely kick it. Yes, we do.
You know what I mean? And you have to tell everybody that is American football so that everybody understands what you're talking about.
I apologize.
Well, when
true.
You say ash, you're gonna have to tell us that is American ash that you mean, or use the word concentrate, because for us, ash is not an extract.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. For sure. And again, that it's so ingrained in our thought here, but you're right. It's its own thing in it, and it's got such a long and rich history. You know, I don't want to see us bastardize it for you guys.
No, but it's like you can do whatever you want here. You're going to need to use the word American before it, because we cannot talk. And people like take it like, oh, Frenchy is so fucking crazy. Dude, I'm cool. Quand, go and say that to a Moroccan, an Afghan, a Lebanese.
Then you'll see a crazy guy.
In Europe, the guy is going to jump on your neck. You know what I mean? It's like, and will not let you breathe. It's like, you cannot do that. It's part of our culture. It's thousands of years old. It's wow. Like, you need to respect it, especially if you want to create the standard of the future.
Yes.
You don't have the culture, but you are still part of that culture.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You're just an evolution of it.
A branch, a different
you
offshoot.
Know? So it's like, you need that balance where stepping is in the future. It's not stepping and crushing traditions that are not even known. We don't even understand the world scientific, the science behind everything that is traditional. Dude, the guy knew how to activate cannabinoid.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yes.
It's like already they collected something they couldn't see.
Yes. 100%.
But there is not one country in the world, one producing country that do not press their resin before smoking. Nobody smoke and press resin ever.
Right.
Because it's not good.
Interesting.
And pressing make good hashish. You don't have they don't give you the science behind, but it's like when you spend 18 years of your life pressing resin. Mm. I couldn't wait to learn the science behind. And the first step was decarboxylation. It's like, oh, wow, dude. They literally knew how to activate. They understood that the stuff was pure medicine.
That's so cool.
And that you needed to get rid of a carboxyl acid that transformed in CO2 to be able to make it strong. How? Wow.
It's incredible, man. It really is mind-blowing and gives you a sense of like humbleness and gratitude.
Where did you experience
that the most? You mentioned you went through the Middle East. Let me just ask you about that. What was it like? You said you went to Afghanistan and working with some of the hash makers there.
Afghanistan. I arrived the war, the Russian war had started already. It was early 1980, and it had started for a few months.
Holy shit!
So I became friend with Afghan refugee in India, in New Delhi.
Uh-huh.
Like over the course of, I don't know, three, four years, I think.
Jeez.
They were waiting for to become, they were trying to go Australia, Canada, or Germany, like applying for visa and stuff. And so I learned a lot from them. Otherwise, I made ash in hashish traditional Pakistan and Morocco. Like,
oh, nice. I've been to Morocco.
Producing country.
That's cool. I was too young. I wish I would have smoked hash while I was in Morocco. I was a little kid. Like you said, I wasn't hip to it yet, but Moroccan hash, that's got to be pretty fucking tasty, huh?
There's a new kid on the block. Huh? They don't have really a long, long old culture of hashish.
I see.
They started to make ash in the late 60s.
Mm. So very, very
they have
new
a longer. They have a longer heritage of cannabis flower, kif.
Ah.
That's why that's another word that is really hard to have you used for. Not like for green
green shake, green leftover
like
powder.
Third, fourth, fifth grade tricon gland. There it's a flower chopped super fine with a tiny bit of black tobacco.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, and you smoke that in a long stem pipe with a tiny clay ball.
Yes, I've seen those. I have one of those. I have one of those long stem thin pipes.
Sure.
Oh, that's so cool, man. I love that. I feel like we could just do a whole, I would talk to you for hours about travel, man. I've been all over Africa, all over Asia, and I don't know. I just get really hyped up when talking travel, but we should probably bring it back around. Someone wants to know which strain you think makes the best hash or which strain you're most personally excited about.
Personally excited, it's local Mando Humboldt, you wouldn't know. Otherwise, that have blown my mind away. Let's start by TGA, I have a lot of love for Sub Cool because he's somebody who made me a teacher and a writer when I didn't even know I was good at it.
Wow.
And he knew before me. And he's really been a great mentor and help without ever asking for anything. Hmm. And I know his genetic a lot. The strongest ash I ever made is Vortex.
Oh, sure.
Vortex,
great strain.
Violent in making ash. And most of TGA genetic is really, really good resin, except Agent Orange.
Hmm.
I have never really had a good result with Agent Orange. Despite the terpene profile, the quality of the resin is different.
You're really opening my eyes, Frenchie. I just had an experience with a lilac diamond by Ethos, and I was so stunned that the trichomes weren't sticky like glue. The trichomes were greasy and slick, almost like crude oil. And I'm wondering if this differentiation between resin and cannabinoid is going to be the next big thing. And here you are on Growcast talking about it now.
Yeah, but that lotion feel of the resin, it's very unique to America. Also, I've never experienced that anywhere.
Oh, really?
So I don't think it's a ripeness.
I don't know what that is, but it was enjoyable. It was a very good bud, organically grown by our own Rizo Rich, but it was different.
And it's very hard to make ash from it.
Oh, I would imagine so.
Because it's more, it doesn't stick. It's a lotion. It's
oily almost. Sir.
There must be a lot of water-soluble terpene, possibly.
Oh, interesting. So cool, man. This has really been great. I really do.
Let me give you more of what I like.
Please, yeah,
MTG.
More.
MTG. The dude from MTG actually, bless his heart, died. He left an amazing heritage. Orange Turbo from MTG, 22% return.
Wow.
22% return.
Jeez.
You age the stuff, it taste and smell like a banana brandy with like orange rim.
Sounds incredible.
Anything OG is damn good in general.
Okay.
And the Kush.
Ah, and the Kush, of course.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Otherwise, my very favorite breeder in the Emerald Triangle, Aficionado Estate, Aficionado French Connection, and Freeborn Selection.
All right.
That's the two I like the genetics the most.
Awesome. We'll have to get some breeder features going. We love to feature breeders
everything.
On the show. So. That's great, man. Are you loving Humboldt County and working with all the kind of merging with that heritage, you know, really the deepest, longest standing American history when it comes to cannabis? Are you enjoying ingratiating yourself there?
It's my tribe. When I stopped traveling, I became a dad. I lost my tribe. For 18, 20 years, traveling the way I did, there is a tribe of people like me that live on the fringe of society that keep moving. And that was my tribe. Ash maker, ash lover, hallucinogenic plant.
Transient traveler. Yeah. I don't want to cut you off, but that's very respectable, Frenchie, that you can have your foot in both of those worlds and go from a world of limitlessness and complete and utter liberation, and then more to a transition into a more traditional world, kind of like where I am, where you're setting down a family and enjoying the deep, deep satisfaction that comes from that. That's very admirable, Frenchie. You should be proud of the life you've lived. I'm sure you are.
Yeah, but it was like that life was limited to my wife and daughter. Everybody else was a lie,
right,
or hiding who really I was. Nobody knew I smoke, only my wife and dealer.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? It's like I lived a lie because I wanted to protect my relation with my daughter and my family.
I see. So there was a sacrifice there.
When my daughter left the house and that actually came into the industry, And when I went to the first time to the Emerald Cup in Humboldt, it was like my tribe, but instead of nomadic, sedentary.
Yes. Yes.
And it's like that first weekend, I fucking cried the whole weekend. I was so like, oh.
Oh, that's so sweet, man. I love that. You know, that actually that has a special place in my heart, Frenchie, because I lived in Humboldt County, right in Eureka for 5 years from 2010 to 2015. I've got family in Northern California. I too was an outsider who moved in, and what a culture it is with open arms. Everybody's just so lovely there, and it's a special breed of California, and it's not like the rest of California.
Not with everybody.
Yeah, it's definitely unique. And
but yeah, yes, they are. They really truly are. It's very simple. For me, there is my wife and daughter and my farmer. Mm-hmm. There is nothing I wouldn't do for them.
You know, I love it.
Not only I'm 101% dependent on them for who I am and what I put on the table in any case, but it's like, that's my tribe. You don't fuck with us. That's my territory. It's like I just work with regenerative farming,
great,
small farmer from the Emerald Triangle. Oof. That's it.
Oof. Oof. Small, regenerative, Humboldt farmer. Oh, handmade hash. That sounds like heaven, my friend. Hey, Frenchie, do you drink coffee?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would like to send you some Purity coffee. I work with a company that I was just on their regenerative farms in Colombia, and I would love to send you some coffee from some people that have the same level of passion about their coffee as you do about your hash.
Oh, definitely. I eat chocolate made by people that have the same passion that you make chocolate.
Yeah, buddy.
And try it. It's like there is a fringe world of people that are dedicated to quality. And that's for me, quality has been everything all my life. There is a dedication, doesn't matter your craft, that dedication for quality. In France, it's shown into our appellation d'origine. Like Roquefort was protected by the French government through a decree from the parliament in 1411.
Jeez. Yeah.
You know what?
600 years ago.
So it's like that's one. I guess that's what runs in my blood. It's quality is everything, and you give everything to be able to make quality.
I didn't want to like start off on a weird turn, but when you were talking about how you hit your first hash and it was like it just connected you to all that stuff, I didn't want to freak you out right off the bat. But I wonder if there's like an ancestral connection there as well. If someone's trying a psychoactive for the first time, you might be clicking on all the generations before you who have also interacted with that psychedelic, which is embedded in your genes, and maybe clicking on another part of your genetics in your brain. You know what I mean? Does that make sense, or am I crazy?
Yeah, it's called epigenetic memory.
Fuck yeah, buddy. You're on the same page as me. We need to get together, man.
No, but it's not only that, but I'm creating my own phenotype in my own lifetime. It's called phenotypic plasticity. Every living organism has it.
Wow.
And my daughter did inherit it.
100%.
The stoner part.
100%. No, all sorts of weird stuff. My daughter is the same way.
She doesn't need it.
They'll get parts of you that you never thought you would. It's weird, man. It's really cool to see that, how that passes down.
It's called evolution.
Yes, man. Absolutely. Frenchie, listen, everyone knows where to find you, right? You're all over Instagram, but why don't you say where people can find out more about you and see everything you're doing?
If you want to know a lot about me and what I really, really care for, it's my website, because there is all my writing on it.
FrenchieCannoli.com is that one? You can find you can find his website there.
The six last article for Weed World are the written workshop.
Nice.
Most importantly, the three first article of that series is the science behind what I do. And doesn't matter what, this is what you want to learn. It's like, if you want me, I want people to become better than me. And if you want the same that I want for you, well, that's where you need to start. You need to know why you're doing stuff. You need to understand your the compound you're working with. Mm-hmm. You're a craftsman. There is two things in your life. The product you work with and the tools that you use to do whatever you want with that product. And the product defines the tool. You know what I mean? So it's like, I know that for a fact because I was really good at what I was doing for 20 years of living in producing country, making art. Mm-hmm. But I was totally ignorant of what was, I'd never seen a trichon gland. I was calling that pollen in producing country. I had no idea whatsoever about what I was working with. You know what I mean?
It's maybe what excites
when
me the most.
Good at it.
The ancient practices.
Learning.
Yeah. Merging with the science.
No, it's not that. It's like when I finally learned the science behind.
Yes.
What is a trichon? What are cannabis trichon? Why they are different? How the cannabinoid are formed? Which one is forming each other? Which terpene is so damn important that the plant produce more than others that I need to protect? La 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 la.
Yes.
Now I'm not just making ash. I can make pure CBD ash. I can make pure CBC ash. I can make pure THCV ash. I can keep it with the A. I can decarb it completely. You know what I mean? It's like,
yes.
Now I can manipulate cannabinoid. I can manipulate stuff that I didn't even know existed before I learned the science behind.
So it's amplified.
So it's, like,
it's completely amplified. Yeah.
You need to look because you have the ability to have the science and to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
The more you know, the better you are. You don't need to understand the chemistry behind the transformation of the cannabinoid.
Yes.
You just need to know the mechanic behind and the results to be able to manipulate. You know what I mean?
Yes. I think that's what excites me the most is the amplification. Like your toolkit has been exponentially expanded because you're taking these old practices and you're applying modern science to them. So that's really what excites me the most.
That would be Mila. That would be Mila. There is one evolution in the dry sieving of cannabis resin. It's the use of ice water.
Ah.
Especially when there is a separation between agitation and separation.
Mm-hmm.
When you dry sieve, you have your tool that is made of perforation and the material that you put over it.
Right.
You agitate so that the gland break away from their stock, but at the same time, the gland fall on your tool and there is separation through the perforation.
Mm. Right.
You can, it's two process in one methodology that you cannot separate.
Right.
When you have done many years of dry sieving and somebody bring a machine on one side and bags on the other side, it's like, oh, oh, oh. It's like, it's only true evolution of the game that is tens of thousands of years old.
Love it.
Realize she didn't really consciously understand what she was doing, but she did it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
baby.
Like it's, and that gives you an unreal power.
That's right. That is, it is super empowering. And like you said, humbling and makes you appreciative. So that's really what I got maybe the most out of any of this, Frenchie. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this today. At Frenchie Cannoli on Instagram, of course. Check out the website. Check out the YouTube channel. He's everywhere. Thank you so much, Frenchie.
My pleasure, man. Nice talking to
Take
you.
Take care. We'll let you go, and then we'll wrap up the show. Have a good day, man. And reach out if you need anything from us, okay?
For sure. Right. Bless you.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye. That was awesome, everyone. Make sure to follow Growcast at Growcast on Instagram. Me at Jordan River IG on Instagram. We'll be doing live streams. We'll be having fun. What a great show with Frenchie. I know you enjoyed it. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next time on Growcast. Thank you for tuning in today, everyone. That's our show with Frenchie. I sure did enjoy that interview. What an interesting guy. If you enjoyed today's show, if you enjoyed today's interview, make sure to share Growcast. Make sure to give us a good rating and review. We really appreciate that. We've got some great touching stories up in our review section about people who are just getting started learning how to grow, people who stopped growing for years and started up again after a failed grow, and we've given them the confidence to restart. It really touches our hearts. So make sure to share your story, share the love. It's all we ask, and we really do appreciate that, guys. Shout out to Start to Finish for all your consulting needs, every setup, every situation. They got you covered. Start to Finish. Instagram at start, the number 2, finish, 710. And Jay Blanked, thank you for doing the beat. SoundCloud.com/Jay Blanked. We'll see you next time on Growcast, everybody. Thank you. Be safe out there. Bye-bye.